Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics for February 2016 as sold through Diamond to retailers in North America. These are sell-in numbers, meaning that this is what the stores bought. They're obviously buying it at a discount so they can make money when they sell it to us. And some of these are going to be still sitting on store shelves, so if we go into the stores tomorrow, whenever tomorrow is, we can find something there. It would really suck to go into a store that's so efficient they've sold out of everything. It'd be impressive, though. Man, the breakdown this time around, Marvel, 45.84% of the total units, DC, 31.64%, Image, 9.63%. I mean, those three companies right there, I mean, that's accounting for, 87% of the total unit sales for the top 300. You know, this sort of a thing's not uncommon, but I'd like to see things a little bit more sales in percentage, you know, to the back half of previews and whatnot. IDW had another 3.92%, Dark Horse another 1.99%, so over 93% for the front half of previews. You add in Boom's 1.34% of the total units for the top 300, Dynamite's 1.16%, and we're at over 95.5%. So, again, anytime you're wondering why certain stores don't really buy too deep in the back half of previews other than, you know, Boom, Dynamite, and a few other publishers like Valiant or whatever, by and large, there's not the sales there to be had.
And when you look at dollars, it's just as bad, but Marvel's almost at 50%. I mean, 48.35, DC a little lower than their unit percentage at 30, Image at 8.0%. Again, you just look at the premier publishers, Marvel, DC, Image, IDW, Dark Horse, 92.9% of your dollars.
Yeah. You know,
how much time can you spend chasing 7% of your money?
No matter how much you may want to support those other publishers, it's high risk. Not only is it low return, but typically you're going to have so few copies on it that if you have an extra copy sitting on the shelf when you think you should have sold out or whatever, that can really cut into the profits or kill the profits entirely.
Yeah.
You know, it's that tight of a margin, and that it's unfortunate because I really think the publishers in the back half are where we're getting a lot of the new creators that are 5-10 years from now going to be doing a lot of the Marvel DC books or whatever, maybe, or Image books. It's the entry ramp. It's the diversity in the marketplace. Not to say the others don't have that as well, but it's something that if sales on those other publishers could be enhanced, it's a rising tide that lifts all ships. Everybody benefits from that. I mean, we saw how pretty much everybody benefited from the influx of people that DC brought in back at the beginning of the New 52.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I think that's a bit of a two-way street. Even if the big two do really well and go to something crazy like 90%, that many people in the comic shops is useful and going to help everybody else.
Well, there's percentage and there's number of people in the shops. And the goal is to get more people in the shops, and the percentages shouldn't matter so much because everybody's doing so well.
Exactly. That's my point. Even if these percentages stay exactly the same, but you triple the size of the market, those guys in the back half are doing three times better.
Yeah. But this was another, you know, not so great month. We were about 500,000 units below the average total for the top 300 over the final order era. You know, DC was up a little bit. Marvel and the other publishers were down a little bit. You know, these things happen. It was not a catastrophic month, but it's not one of those where I'm looking at it saying, wow, you know, comics have turned a corner or they're doomed or anything. It's just,
yeah,
you know, one of those things. It was interesting that while Marvel was, you know, they're down, but they're a little below their average, but their average is, again, you know, about $0.7 million more than, or 7 million units, I should say, more than DC's. and really about $3 million more than DC's average dollars. So it's an uneven playing field, and I think that's a lot of what's motivating the Rebirth stuff coming down the line.
Yep.
If we look over at the top 300, topping the list is Dark Knight 3 Master Race number 3 with 146,043 units. That's down a little over 10.5%, which, you know, that's not too bad. One of the things I did notice when I was going through the numbers this month was looking at, you know, how some of these drops are. You know, that's a third issue drop, you know, 10.5% or whatever. That's less than kind of the historic average of about 12.25, a little over, for a third issue drop.
And I've actually got my predictive software up. The Marvel average for the last 18 months on third issues is about 18.2%.
Well, how is it on second issues?
63.4.
Because I did a chart for my article on kind of by year, how is it trending?
Mm-hmm.
And the third issue drop fluctuates a bit, but it's within a certain range.
Mm-hmm.
The second issue drop was between about 22 and 26% between about 2003 and 2011.
And then
it just kind of drops off. From like 2012 to 15, it's been averaging between 28 and 36. And right now, with only 2 months in 2016, we're averaging about 40% for a second issue drop. And to me, the obvious takeaway is that readers are getting more selective. Now, I say that, and I already had somebody email me saying, well, how can you say that? These are retailer orders. Fair point. Great question. Matter of fact, it was one of our listeners that said that, Hip Hop Head on the forum, I believe. And my response to him is, while it's an imperfect system, the retailers are kind of sort of acting like the Electoral College, taking our popular votes of what we buy and kind of translating that into these orders. And there's a little bit of a lag there, but if they're buying things we're not going to buy, or they're not buying things we're going to buy, you know, it's not a good system. So it's self-correcting. It takes time. And part of these second issue drops that are escalating are people are getting more selective. The other thing that does factor into this, of course, is we've got heavy promotions and additional incentive covers on first issues, really inflating those first issue sales to a point that they're obviously unsustainable. I mean, when you've got things that are dropping just a Spider-Man Deadpool number 2 here at rank 12, it did 69,801 units. That's over 50% down from the 140,121 units the first issue did. So boom, right there off the top, half the possible readers are gone. Now, of course, that's a little bit of a fallacy in so much as it's not like we think 140,000 plus people were really interested in that, because it had a number of variant covers, etc., and some people were chasing the covers.
Well, and just to kind of see what we're talking about, if you filter the list to just number twos, and you take the top 10 number twos, those are at rank 12, 15, 17, 31, 48, 62, 64, 70, 77, and 85. Spider-Man, Deadpool, Old Man Logan, Obi-Wan and Anakin, Harley's Little Black Book, A-Force, Rocket Raccoon and Groot, Captain Marvel, Karnak, Silver Surfer, and Poison Ivy, Cycle of Life and Death.
Got it.
Those are the top 10 number twos. The average drop, 46.48%. with the highest one being Karnak at 57.92%, and Silver Surfer right behind it at 56.61%.
What's interesting with Karnak is it was 14 weeks late and 18 weeks between issues. So any story momentum it might have had after the first issue gone. So that certainly didn't help. But again, these are also, you know, pre-orders are based on initial orders, I should say. Obviously, the final order cutoff factored in. That was an item solicited back in September, where most of the list of stuff solicited in December.
But even if you take those out and look at just the top five, so Spider-Man, Old Man Logan, Obi-Wan and Anakin, Harley's Little Black Book, and A-Force, none of them particularly late. If any of them are actually late, it's Harley's Little Black Book. It's been over 10 weeks since issue one.
Mm-hmm.
The average is still 45.83%, and there's still two over 50%, in Spider-Man Deadpool and that Harley book. But A-Force, again, only 4 weeks, right on schedule at a month, 45%. Obi-Wan and Anakin, 4 weeks, right on schedule, 43%. And Old Man Logan, just 2 weeks. So the retailers, even with the final order, had zero time to react.
Yeah.
Still down 38%.
Which is very clearly a reflection of retailer expectations.
Yep.
Which I take as a reflection of what the sales are going to be, or yep, what they expect them to be. Obviously, they could be wrong. In this case, probably not.
Well, and it's funny, you gave two explanations. Hey, readers are more discerning. That's one possible. Or number ones are artificially inflated by all kinds of other shenanigans. Also possible. That one I agree with more. But I would argue the inverse of your first statement is true. You say readers are more discerning. I would argue to some degree readers are less discerning, not in what they buy after number one, but something about, hey, it's a number one, I'll give it a shot. I think they just give a shot to so many number ones that the percentage that ever come back to a number two is zero, and that's, I think, inherently known by the readers. I think there's a certain percentage of readers that, hey, I'll try any number one. I'm only coming back for 10% of the ones I bought the number one of, but I will try anything with a number one on it.
My intention was that they were getting more selective on what they continue reading, and perhaps I should have phrased it that way. But I think your point of there being very less unselective on the first issue of what they sample,
yeah,
I would agree with entirely. But I think that's also a reflection of the promotion, the shenanigans, things like the
absolutely
the variant covers and such. But it's one of those where out of the top 10 you mentioned there of the number twos, the lowest or the least drop was over 25%. So,
oh, yeah,
you know, and that was on the Poison Ivy, which is a mini series. So it really goes to show how first issue sales, when people say, oh, but look how the number one did, it's like, who cares? You know, within a few issues, you're going to have most of that gone.
And that 25% on the Ivy, while you're right, it was the least. The next least was 38.7% on the Old Man Logan.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are the only two with less than a 40% drop.
If you go a little further on the list, you've got a few others that are shallower drops, but they're also lower sales.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's percentage drop. And again, even that 25% was only about a 7,000-8,000 unit drop just because of where Poison Ivy was on the list. And it's a shame because I really have enjoyed that series so far.
But the three number ones that sold over 100,000 that had number twos this month, the second issue averaged about 60,000.
Yeah. Well, and that's why whenever I count the stuff over 1,000, you know, of in past
100,000.
100,000, sorry, thank you. In the last year or so, it's you know, what are the ongoing titles? Which are the ones likely to stay above this mark? Yeah. And I'd been saying that the issue of Batman this month was the most likely one for it to go below 100,000.
Yep.
And it did not.
No, it came up a little.
It bounced up about 1.7% to 102,698 units for issue 49 there. I think that's great. I'm glad to see it staying above the 100,000 mark. 50, no doubt, is going to do it. To me, that's a slam dunk. It'll go up a bit. How 51 and 52 go before Rebirth relaunches it, I see no reason to think it's going to go below 100,000 on those two. Now, it may not be much above, but and it could drop below, but I don't think it will.
I don't think it'll affect it. I do. This is something we'll never know. I will be interested to see how the number two for Batman does. And I'm worried that 2-3 might be where you see it drop below 100,000. And I wonder if the choice to go with a number one there instead of the classic number, as they did with Detective, could be a mistake.
It could be, but they're going with the classic numbering on Action and Detective, which are their oldest titles.
Absolutely, and I understand that. If there were two others, I would have thought about Batman and Superman. Batman, I would have thought about harder because you got more to lose. So I'm not saying it would have been the right decision. I'm saying it's a decision that you've got a lot more to lose than you do with anything else.
Agreed, agreed. It'll be interesting to see how Action and Detective do in place of a new number one with those the legacy numbering or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously they're re-entering a honeymoon period. We're going to have a few months of flux, that sort of thing. And by flux, I basically mean free fall in some respects. well, again, you know, we're talking, you know, a pretty big percentage drop, probably around 30 on the second issue or whatever, maybe another 10 or whatever on the third. I mean, these days you could take a title starting at 100,000 and odds are it's going to drop every issue. I mean, better than even odds, better than probably 80-20, although I'd have to double check that. And if it follows the standard pattern on drops, by 12 issues in, if it's selling 33,000 units, it's lucky. You know, it's just, it's a harsh market, and it's one thing to have standard attrition just take its toll. That's going to happen. Rachel Rising this month is a good example of that. It's a title that's been around a good couple of years, creator-owned title. People who like it. People who don't are already off. But even so, it's one that's just, it's losing a little sales momentum, you know, every month.
Yep.
Not much, nothing to be concerned about.
And people that have never heard of it, they represent most of it, most of the rest of the market. I've never heard of it still.
But it's one of those things that after 3 years, you lose a percent or so every month. You know, it takes its toll because it's a cumulative percent a month.
Yep.
You know, it's not just you're at 99, then 98, 97 or whatever. It's a percent of whatever's left. You know, there's not much information about the Rebirth stuff. We've gotten some information as to what titles are coming out of it. And, you know, I was looking at that, comparing it to the list of you know, DC titles this month. And there were a couple of things I'm not surprised by, but there are a few it's just I just don't understand.
Okay.
The decision to go twice monthly on a couple of these books. Cyborg. Don't get me wrong, I love the character. But are the sales really justifying, you know, two issues a month? It did 18,091 units, and that's down 4.66% from the previous month.
I think they're hoping on some movie kickback. I you know, as we've talked about, we don't think that'll have much effect, but I think they're hoping for that.
Certainly that would explain Suicide Squad. It's going to go twice monthly, and I think Jim Lee's going to be on the book. So, okay, it'll do better than it was doing.
Yeah. And Cyborg is, in this era of PC and diversity, I prefer them gambling with twice a month on Cyborg than randomly changing the gender or ethnicity of some other classic character.
That's fair.
If you want to push, hey, we've got a, you know, person of this ethnicity, this gender, whatever, I'd much rather see Wonder Woman and Cyborg go twice a month than all of a sudden decide Batman's a Chinese woman or something, just so we can prove diversity.
Sorry, I'm still absorbing the Batman as a Chinese woman. Give me a moment.
but you understand what I'm saying.
They should try that.
Vic Stone, classic character, classically is the ethnicity he is. If you're going to push diversity, I'd much rather see that than some false version of a character given an ethnicity just to claim diversity.
I completely agree, and I think with Cyborg, it's even a bit more of a potential diversity push, sort of, because not only is he not a white guy, as most of, you know, a lot of title characters and whatnot are, but you could argue the handicapped aspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, granted, with the Cyborg attachments and stuff, it's a little bit of a hard argument, but certainly it brings that aspect to the title, even if the character himself you really couldn't consider handicapped in so much as he's a superhero.
But it does bring that aspect into personal life stories when those come up.
Oh, absolutely.
You're dealing with interpersonal relationships and stuff. It's, you know, it is a prosthetic limb, things like that still come up.
Yeah.
And not, again, not manufactured or phony, as we see in some cases.
Well, and it's a character that has been around, 30 years now?
At least.
I guess it was 1980 when he started.
80, 81, yeah.
Because he was on the Super Friends back in the day for a season. Obviously, the Teen Titans cartoon. So it's a well-established character, and one that certainly I am glad to see have his own book. I'm not begrudging it going twice monthly. I just think the sales really make that an interesting choice.
It is an interesting choice. But like I said,
it's a gamble.
They're trying.
Yep. And again, I'm not saying they shouldn't. But there were a couple like that just the numbers are close enough to cancellation levels and heading in that direction that to kind of double down on some of them just puzzles me.
Well, and I will say this. I think it was an interesting choice of the New 52 to essentially replace the Martian Manhunter with Cyborg in the Justice League. And I don't think it has... I think it's worked, is what I'm going to say. I don't think it's hurt or... You know, there's a part of me that misses John, but there's a part of me that loves Cyborg in that role, too.
I like Cyborg having kind of graduated to the big time with that.
Yeah, exactly.
It falls again back in line to him having hung out with them in the Super Friends cartoon.
Yeah.
What I miss more than the Martian Manhunter being a member of the Justice League, because when I first got into the Justice League, it was around issue somewhere in the 170s, 180s of the original run. He wasn't around for another 40 issues until somewhere around 220 or something. I mean, he'd been there once or twice, but that's when he became back a member or whatever. So he was out of pocket for a while. I really miss, with the New 52, the New Teen Titans. And, of course, that's one of the titles, or Titans is one of the titles that's starting up going once monthly, in addition to a Teen Titans title.
I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. I'm with you in some respects. I enjoy the current Teen Titans more than probably just about anybody. I don't think they're phenomenal, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But there is... For people like you and me to a degree that grew up on the classic New Teen Titans, part of something that was enjoyable was watching the evolution of Nightwing, watching Donna grow up.
Yeah.
You know, watching Speedy mature, you know, some of, you know, even, you know, Beast Boy and, you know, all of them. I don't think retroing them into teenagers again works.
And I'm not suggesting we do that, or that get done. I would just like to have that backstory. But you still need a teen book. Well, I'd like to have their backstory, and maybe Titans Hunt will do this, continue to have been.
Yes, that I agree with. I have no problem with those characters existing as they've always existed, but I do think there needs to be a team of young people.
Absolutely. I'm all for a teen Titans and a group of older Titans. Kind of the difference between high schoolers and college age people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm perfectly okay with that. And I'm hoping that's what they're going to do here. And, you know, with Red Hood and the Outlaws, Titans, Teen Titans, Cyborg, Nightwing, Batgirl, we've got kind of that age group of characters fairly well represented.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in this lineup. We're getting a Supergirl title again.
Do we have any idea which one?
I have no idea. All I have is a list of here's what they're planning on doing.
And with the discussion about it matching the TV and movies, we're assuming it's going to be similar to the one currently on television.
Probably. I don't know. For that matter, I don't know which Blue Beetle we're going to get. I don't know how they may revamp either Batman Beyond or the Earth 2 title. Yeah. Again, both of those surviving or continuing surprises me a bit. Gotham Academy getting another semester. That's doing, you know, 14,334 units. I get continuing with it. They're doing a crossover with Boom in the Lumberjanes. So they're trying to go after a particular demographic there that I am not part of. So, I mean, there's that. And that's fine. They should be going after other audiences than just the one I fall into. But the numbers just aren't there sufficiently for me to think that that's a winning move.
I don't know. Here's what I'll say. I've never read Gotham Academy. I will at least give it a look with the Rebirth.
How come?
Because my DC reading has gone from just about everything to about half to Batman in the last, I don't know, 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Rebirth, I'm essentially going to give them a pass and try to go back to everything for a month or two and see.
And that's one of the reasons why number ones, again, do better.
Yes.
And of course, like you were saying, it's not like you're expecting to follow all of them after that.
No.
But you're gonna sample.
I'm going to sample, and I'm going to give them a legit shot, and, you know, it is what it is. You know, you never know.
I mean, they've got three titles that I think are, at this point, blank slates, and I have no idea what to expect on them. There's the Super Dash Man.
Yes.
There's Superwoman.
Yep.
And there's Super Sons.
Yep.
All of which could be a lot of fun. I like what they've done in past incarnations with various Superwomen and the Super Sons. But until we get some actual creators attached to these books, some premises, and pitches and whatnot, it's hard to say how they're going to do, but I'm looking at most of the titles that they're going to essentially be replacing, or I guess continuing with these. And a lot of them are in the, you know, 20, 30, 35,000 range for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to take too much for them to come out of this doing as well as or better than they've been doing.
Or significantly worse.
That's always a possibility.
Yes.
But there are enough of the titles they're replacing that are, frankly, not far from cancellation level.
Yes, that is very true.
You know, another couple of months and Earth 2 Society, I wouldn't expect it to keep going. You know, some of these after the next arc, they would have been pretty much over anyways. So replacing Green Lantern Corps Edge of Oblivion, which the second issue did 21,265 units, even if you average that with the Green Lantern title, where 49 did, 35,236 units, I mean, the average of that is 28,251 yep. units. Okay, fine. Replace it with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps and Green Lanterns. So take the key Green Lantern, put him in what would otherwise seem like the second-tier book, turn Green Lantern into a plural, and is it the second-tier book? Again, it clouds the issue like we talked about last time with Marvel of what is the flagship book for some of these properties.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody had suggested...
in that particular case, I don't think they've clouded the issue.
Which one do you think is the...
Green Lantern, absolutely. But same thing, you know, Marvel, which of the Spider-Men? There's Amazing Spider-Man, and then there's 10 others, and which one's the second? I have no idea.
But for me, with the Spider-Man, it's a separate issue because you've got three guys swinging around New York and,
yes.
you know, claiming to be Spider-Man.
You've got Amazing, and then you've got 10 other books that are all not the second one.
But my point was you have Peter Parker,
yes.
you've got Miles Morales, and you've got Miguel O'Hara.
Okay.
So, and not only do you have multiple Spider-Man books, you have multiple Spider-Men.
Well, and you've got Gwen and a couple others, too.
Once you toss the Spider-Women into the mix, you got a whole arachnophobia thing going on there. It's crazy.
But what I was going to say, we were talking mainly about the big team books with mm-hmm. Marvel last month.
Yeah.
Avengers and X-Men, or Uncanny, or whichever it is. At this point, from what I'm seeing, Justice League is still Justice League.
Yes.
And there's no confusion there. Even though there has been in the past, this time I think they're actually cleaning that up.
Well, they're going to go to Justice League and Justice League America.
Yep.
So which is the flagship, which isn't, and does it matter? And one of our listeners, or one of the people in the forum, had suggested that it was intentional because they can, and that maybe this is actually helping the sales.
Yep, that's possible.
I don't know if I totally buy into that or not. The concept of them intentionally trying to break the concept of a flagship book and the other run, you know, half the one selling about half that, that's not a bad idea to try to do, but...
It becomes the median. Where's the median landing? And if yeah. it's higher than it was, you're doing the right thing. If it's lower than it was, you made a mistake.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, again, we saw that back when they took multiple Spider-Man titles and merged them into Amazing Spider-Man. Which is ironic, because as we just mentioned, there's now about half a dozen different Spider-Man books around, in yes. addition to. It's like, the pendulum swings back and forth.
I was going to say, let's talk about what I think is the most interesting thing on this list, at least in the top 20.
Okay.
Rank number 6, Deadpool number 7, 88,264, up almost 50%. Merc for the money, a $10 book. What did I miss here? What do I not know about this?
Merc for the Money is a $4.99 book.
Oh, Deadpool you're right.
Number seven is the $10.
Is the $10 book. The one that I was talking about is Deadpool number 7. Sorry.
That was the 25th anniversary. It was an extra sized issue. It was an extra crossed issue.
Okay.
But again, they went. It's, you know, magic number issue, essentially, minus the number.
Yeah, I was going to say magic issue 7.
Well, it's an anniversary issue, except this time it actually was an anniversary in terms of years. Or at least they decided it was. Mercs for the Money, however, is something that was in the Comic-Con box this last month. I got a copy of it when I was going through that subscription box. And remember how a few months ago we'd seen extra orders on Deadpool number 1?
Yes.
the Marvel Collector Corps had a variant edition number one of Deadpool number one in its box in February. So they just bought it early, saving, you know, planning for, again, the when the movie came out.
Interestingly with that, as we pointed out at the time, its retail rank was ridiculously low, meaning Marvel gave themselves a heck of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
If the same thing happened with
Marvel gave the box a heck of a deal.
Okay.
I think it's run by Funko, not by Marvel. I could be wrong on that.
Fair enough. If the same thing is true of this Merc for the Money book, that does not seem to hold because its retail rank is right in line with where it should be. It's six. Everything is down one because the $10 book is retail rank number two.
Yeah, there's a little bit of funniness there between Darth Vader and Power Man and Iron Fist being swapped retail ranks than what you might expect. But yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, so wherever that Mercs for the Money might end up in a box, it doesn't look like they got nearly the discount that reorder of Deadpool number one got.
Yeah, and again, that was the Comic-Con box, and it may also be that not only did they not get a discount, it's a question of what's the circulation on that box.
Yeah.
So it's, and again, did it go through Diamond? They may have had a deal through some other way. Again, there's been a Batman issue or two that, matter of fact, the first, and this is getting a little bit ahead of myself because this issue won't go, or this other episode won't go up for a bit. The first Legion of Collectors box came out and it had a DC back issue in it that I haven't seen reorder activity on the list. I'll hold off until that, you know, episode, because I've already recorded that part as to which comic it is. So, I mean, I've always had some issues with them putting promotionally priced things on the same list as if they are just regular sales through retailers.
But again, like, as we've discussed, if you're really paying attention, the retail rank gives you some clue into that.
Just to hop over to the trade side for just a moment.
And you and TJ got quite a few questions and comments on that.
Yeah, there is an item at rank 225 on the trade side that had a retail rank of 10,725. So I reached out to Eric, who owns one of the guys for Cowabunga Comics,
mm-hmm.
Who's provided me with some great information. I'm like, okay, I got to ask, what's up with this one? And it seems like that was one of those where not only did they have a, hey, we'll give it to you for like, you know, $1.25, $2.50 or, you know, $5. So something way cheaper than regular price. It was a 2-for-1 deal. So you buy one, you get a second copy free, cutting the, essentially doubling the effective discount almost, or, you know, the value of it, which is how that was essentially pennies on the dollar. And that, like you said, it pays on some of these things to really look at that retail ranking. Now, one of the questions we got, and I'm hoping but doubting if I'll have time to spend crunching the numbers, one of the questions on that was, with some of those things, it was the listener who's getting, I'm blanking on his name, who gets the comics bento, because some of the stuff at the top of the trades list was all in the bento box.
Yes.
And he was wondering if I could, because he had noticed, again, the retail rankings, he was wondering if I could estimate the discount level.
Yes. The user post by ND Horse.
Yes, that's the one. Thank you.
Gives us, it has been great with you, for you and TJ, giving you kind of a list of what's in every one. And yes, he pointed out that those rank, you know, at 9, 13, and 14 on the list this month. And
mm-hmm.
essentially, you could estimate from that there's about 300 or 3,000 subscribers. And yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to see if I can actually work out what the, what discount they may have gotten on those based on how other items did on the list. But that's a little challenging in so much as the retail rank is based on the invoiced amount.
Yes, which means you've got to, you're not going to figure out what discount they got. You're going to figure out how much greater a discount. At best, you can figure out how much better a discount they got than just your average comic.
Exactly. And every comic shop, I mean, is getting different discounts for DC and Marvel for other books, depending on who publishes it and how much they've ordered from that publisher in the past rolling 12 months, or, you know, the math on it gets a little crazy. So it's not like everybody's getting a single discount.
Yes.
So, and since we don't have the detail level to well, this percentage was at 65 or 60%, this was at 35%, or, you know, whatever. it's a crapshoot. It's a
best
guess.
You can do is try to figure out how much better than the average discount they got was.
Exactly. And even that, like I said,
isn't ballpark. Easy.
Yeah, that too. But it is kind of interesting when you see some of these numbers where suddenly it's like, wow, that's completely out of the norm or whatever, or out of what you would expect for the retail ranking.
Here's something I do want to bring up that I just ranks 2 and 3, Star Wars and Batman, both over 100,000, both slight increases over the previous issue.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how this month was a slightly down month.
Mm-hmm.
Does that hold that when you have generically a lackluster month, stores may have some extra capital, and so they order a few more of the best-selling books, which is why you might be seeing some of those increases on books like Star Wars and Batman. Books that do well, books that stores are fairly confident they can sell. So if you've got some extra money, you might as well order an extra copy or two of those.
That's a good theory. It's certainly not a bad gamble to take. The other possibility, Star Wars is starting a new story arc.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be treating it not like a number one, but again, maybe more people are gonna, you know, been enjoying the trades. They may jump on at the start of a new story arc.
Okay.
With Batman, it's leading up to the new status quo change in issue 50.
Yep.
So I think there's some excitement there. Matter of fact, I think that was why I picked that as a preview spotlight pick of the month for.
But there's a few other books in the top 25 that got increases that you would think, you know, Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's a third issue bump. Arguably, that is, it did even better than they expected in the first two.
Well, if you.
Issue 3 and 4 jumps are always a good sign.
If you go further down on the list at rank, let's see, 177.
Mm-hmm.
We've got nearly 10,000 units of reorder activity on that first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Batman crossover. And then down at rank 206, we've got nearly 8,000 units of Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's doing better than even they expected.
Absolutely. You know, so again, this is where third, fourth issue kind of corrections, you know, really are a good indicator of how a title is doing.
Yeah. Invincible Iron Man got a modest bump, too.
Again, that was the start of a new story arc.
Okay.
Not saying that is why it did it, but that is a factor. I'm also willing to bet if I dug around that this might have more incentive covers and such than the previous issue did.
Yeah, it actually got a significant jump, so yeah, something else happened there.
Yeah. It takes some time to do the digging to count up the number of variants they do on some of these things. It is just insane. But if it's working for them, they're going to keep doing it.
Just kind of looking at the list, we've kind of talked about everything in the top 10 with the exception. Vader number 16, down to 81,000, but still solid. I don't know. Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about that. Do you?
We were just talking about how some other books may have gone up at the start of a new story arc. Here's one that went down at the start of a new story arc.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we look back at how that one had been doing prior to the crossover, it was still doing way better than this is the lowest that title has
done. This is the lowest it's ever been.
Yeah. So maybe people tried the crossover and said, that's great. I'm going to read this other book. I don't know if that happened or not. I really can't explain why that one went down and others went up.
Star Wars is doing so well. I do think, and I'm loving most of the books. You know, I'm 6 months behind on the Unlimited thing, but I've read them all that have come out that way, and I'm enjoying them. I do think they've oversaturated a touch.
I think that's fair, but personally, I think the Darth Vader one's a little bit better than Star Wars.
Okay.
I don't know that the market would agree with me. There's a 30,000 vote difference in the other way. You know what I mean?
Here's what I'll say. I can't say you're wrong, but to me, the book with Luke's still better than the book without Luke.
The only thing I have to say is bless you, because there are other people who can definitely say that I'm wrong.
Like I said, I don't think the book's... I like Darth Vader book. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But to me, the Luke book will still always be the flagship.
No, that I agree with. and again, Star Wars, that's the property. Darth Vader's just one of the characters.
Yeah. But I do think they've gone a little nuts with a number of Star Wars books.
Yeah, but it's working. Why would they not go nuts?
Yes and no. When you start to get books like Catan down at 38,000, I begin to question how much it's really working. Which
it's working in aggregate. There are a couple of books that are not working,
you know,
as well.
Might as well say in 10,000.
You know, it's there have been months where it was almost 20% of the Marvel sales. So absolutely. They're doing a good job with it. Should they be coming out with maybe a few less books? You know, right now, after a movie's, you know, come out not that long ago and more are coming out, you know, it's, we're going to see at least a book a week of Star Wars stuff.
Yep.
Until the end of the decade, probably.
Yep. And this is where, when you talk about the double shipping, this is where I'd say that. If your goal is a Star Wars book a month, maybe you ship a Star Wars book twice a month, Darth Vader and maybe one or two others, instead of six books, all one a month.
I would almost be tempted to do what they did with 52, where you've got one book that has multiple plots going through it, to where it's like, this is just the Star Wars universe title.
Yep.
It comes out every week.
Weekly. Yep. You can do
sometimes
something like that.
Sometimes you spend more with Vader, sometimes more with Chewie, sometimes Luke, you know, whatever.
But yeah, I'm looking at these numbers, and when I see a Star Wars book under 40,000, I start going, okay, maybe they pushed it a little too hard.
Yeah, but I think with The Last Padawan, though, that's based on a cartoon. It's a character that, if you haven't watched that animated computer animated series, you really don't know who that character is. So, to me, that's a spin-off, almost, of the franchise, not a core part of it.
Okay. Well, rank 17, Obi-Wan and Anakin. Core part, issue number 2, down 43.1% for the second issue, below 60,000.
Yeah.
You know, again, maybe just pushed a little too hard.
I would agree. Again, they're coming out with stuff on a regular basis, yeah. Or new ones on a regular basis, I should say.
Yeah.
Some are going to work better than others. And are they going to oversaturate? Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
That's how they know to pull back. Or that's how they could know to pull back. I'm not saying they will pull back.
Yep. The next one on the list, interesting one. Power Man and Iron Fist number 1, rank 8, 79,000 just over. I don't know. For a Marvel number 1, 80,000 almost feels low these days. On the other hand, for Power Man and Iron Fist, that sounds phenomenal. Do you have an opinion?
I have an opinion.
Okay.
Read the book, enjoyed the book, didn't care for the art style. Just okay. It's a style thing. The art was fine in terms of quality. It's just a little bit more cartoony than I personally care for. This is another one of the Marvel books that if we lose 40, 50, 60% on the second issue, will not surprise me at all. And it's a shame because it's not a bad book, but it's also not an 80,000 or 79,000 unit book. A few books are these days, you know, again, that's what, rank 8, and of that, two of the ones above it are first issues that aren't going to be there at that point next month.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. So, yeah, once you
two
take
are
out,
also first issues. This is a first issue volume.
And to be fair, those are first issues of Spider-Man and Deadpool. Power Man probably doesn't belong in the class we're talking about anyway. We're talking Dark Knight, Batman, Star Wars, Spider-Man, Deadpool, Darth Vader. Power Man and Iron Fist, I don't care how much you love the characters, let's face it, they're not going to stay in that category.
Even after Luke Cage gets a Netflix series, which is yet
exactly.
to come out.
He's still not staying in the Batman, Spider-Man, Star Wars realm.
No. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it.
They're fun characters. They captured a lot of the Heroes for Hire kind of fun magic and stuff. But it's a lot of titles, a lot of properties, I should say, gravitate to kind of about how they usually do.
Yeah.
That's not where this one is yet. It's got a little ways to drop. But again, kudos for them for getting the sales they did. It could surprise us and stay up there. You know, there was a period where, you know, the first issue sales of Harley Quinn surprised me. It's like, well, will it sustain that or not? And it hasn't totally, but it's done amazingly well. So I don't think Power Man and Iron Fist is going to be that kind of a book for Marvel.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows?
Speaking of that, there was a news item this week. Apparently, Shang-Chi has been added to the Iron Fist Netflix series, which means there could be a Master of Kung Fu series coming as well.
Oh, that's cool.
At some point down the list.
I still want to see a Hellcat series.
Yeah, Patsy'd be great as her own character, as her having her own series.
That absolutely be fun. Let's see. Walking Dead at rank 13 pretty much fell right back in line with how the title had been doing prior to the 150.
Yep.
You know, a little above, but not by much. Not a surprise there at all. Invincible Iron Man there at the 63,233. We're about to get International Iron Man starting up. We'll see if that impacts the sales of this or not, and if they really need two Iron Man books right now. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. He's getting
another movie.
Yeah, but why do they need a second book? This one's coming out fast enough as it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, every other week, it seems like these a lot of Marvel titles are, not just Marvel titles, but a lot of titles are coming out.
The book a couple down from it that I would argue is doing amazingly well, and I'll continue to say this, Mighty Thor number 4 at 56,567, I agree, that doesn't sound that impressive. It's down another 6%, still above every Avengers book on this list.
I'm tempted to say this one's underperforming.
Okay.
And I'm not totally sold on that concept, but I think it's possible, and I think that with where they're going with Thor and what's going on with her civilian non-Thor identity, they could really kick into a storyline that could get a lot of attention, be a very interesting storyline, a very personal, you know, a heart-tugging kind of a storyline, and could really bounce this title up 10, 20,000 units. Now, whether that'll happen or not, that's another matter entirely.
But still, when Thor number 4 is on the list, and yes, it's at 19, and yes, it's under 60,000. But when I look right below that and see all different Avengers, Uncanny X-Men, all new X-Men, all new, all different Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man, yeah, it's a point issue. Extraordinary X-Men. I gotta say, in general, Thor's outperforming anyways.
Well, it's outperforming every Avenger and X-Men book out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's still, I think, 4. It can do better.
Yes.
You know, to me, that's a wild combination, you know. And certainly, you know, again, the 56,567 units, you can go up from there. That is very doable. And if they play their cards right, I think they definitely would. Uphill battle, I'm not saying it's a sure thing, but the fact that, like you said, it's outperforming so many other books, that's impressive. And you know, the creative team should be proud. Now, it's also outperforming Harley Quinn, a rank or two below that.
Yep.
51,495 units on issue number 25. That's up 14.52%. I think a large part due to the Joker being in that issue.
I would agree with that.
You know, it's the first time those two characters have really interacted in quite some time, and it was a terrific issue.
It was.
You know, so, again, Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti, they're just doing some terrific work on that book. And that was another one that is going to go twice monthly, and it's like, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Whether we'll still get Harley's little black book and the team-up book she's got, I don't know, but they've had so much success with Harley Quinn. About the only thing I think they could do that would really just catapult that up to another level is if somehow they could get Bruce Timm working on the book in some capacity.
Not Bruce Timm. I don't think you need Bruce Timm as the artist. I don't think that gets you any more sales than Amanda Connor does.
I don't think artist. I would do is some writing.
Except the answer is not Bruce Timm in that case, in my opinion.
I don't think he'd do it.
Yeah, but the guy who would do it, and you leave Amanda Connor doing the art, is Paul Dini. And that's a boost.
Yeah.
Arguably the guy who co-created the character with Bruce Timm.
Yeah, yeah.
And has shown a willingness to work in comics and work well in comics.
Yeah. But those are about the only creators I think you could get on the book.
It would be any better. Yeah, absolutely.
It would be any better. And again, yeah, the artist they've got Chad Harden is just terrific on there.
He is. And Amanda's covers are still...
Absolutely.
Her covers.
It's a great combination. They've got a really good creative team. It'll be a hard act to follow should they ever leave the book. But I do think there are a handful of people that could come on and imagine maybe Paul Dini writing, Frank Cho on the art. That could possibly be a very interesting creative team. And I only say that because eventually any creative team on a book is going to leave. I'm not looking forward to this team leaving because, again, they've done just a terrific job on the title.
I will say this. With what they're doing in sales in general and how they're doing with that book and a few others, I would love to see DC, for all the grumblings and complainings up at the top, I don't want to see in the corporate structure, but let's really split up that team and let's see Palmiotti go head-to-head with Quesada as the editor-in-chief.
That would be interesting.
It certainly would. And I think he's the one guy they've got that might, let Jeff keep doing his TV thing, let Jim Lee keep doing the video game thing. But I think Palmiotti running the comic side would be an interesting choice. And to think those two guys, arguably could be at the head of the two big companies, started together, that little studio, 20 years?
Event Comics, I think it was.
20 years ago now?
Wow.
25, maybe?
Palmiotti would be interesting. He wouldn't be one of the first names to come to my mind as to who I think would make a good kind of chief creative officer, editor-in-chief over at DC.
Okay.
I don't know if you could get him, but Mark Wade.
Yeah.
I think he would bring a certain passion and energy to it. He's a terrific editor. I think he brings out the best in a lot of creative people he works with. He's done that sort of a role at Boom and stuff. He's been an editor at Marvel and DC over the years. He's certainly got the track record.
Yeah, I still go back to the old guys.
How does Wade not fall into that? And I apologize, Mark Wade, for saying that. But, seriously.
No, I agree with you, but I still think Mark Wade is probably at his best as a writer to this day.
I'm not going to deny that. The guy is an amazing writer.
Guys that are still good writers, but I think really could lend something in the editor's chairs that are hanging around DC. Guys like Wolfman, guys like Ween. I'd pick them before Wade, not because I have anything against Wade, but I think kind of for that old-time editor, guys like Ween and Wolfman might be a slightly better choice than Wade.
I could see them as editor, but not as chief creative.
Exactly. No, and I agree with that. That's what very specifically is editors.
One of the things down here on the list is Swamp Thing.
Yep.
That Len Wein has been doing.
Yes, he has.
And I'll be honest, that's another one that I'm just not part of the target audience for. I'm getting it, but it's 6 issues. I'm probably not going to miss it when it's gone.
I haven't been getting it. I love Len Wein. I haven't liked Swamp Thing, since Alan Moore left. And to be fair, I picked that up much later. I haven't picked up Swamp Thing off the rack since Len Wein left it the first time. How is that book more like a Len Wein Swamp Thing, or is it him trying to do whatever Lemire was doing for years and years?
It feels like it came out of the 80s.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not saying
that. In a good way or a bad way?
A little of both.
Okay.
the way they're doing the gutters, the panel borders, the page, margins and such versus full bleed makes it feel dated. And there's something about it that's just, it feels like of yesterday, not of today, in my opinion.
Fair enough. And that's the knock against bringing guys like that in as editors. You might get a lot of books that feel like that.
Yeah. And that's part of why I was thinking Wade is he's also still very, very active in, writing and stuff like that on mainstream books. So he's progressed with the time, whereas some of the others, what the market wants right now and where they've really excelled don't always match. And that's a shame because Len Wein has an amazing track record over the years, as does Marv Wolfman, who I've got a ton of respect for and would certainly love to see much more active at DC. He was one of the main movers and shakers at the point at which DC really became a player again back in the 80s.
Yep.
Swamp Thing, by the way, number 2 did 21,452 units. That's down 26.15% from the first issue, which did a little over 29,000.
Yep. I don't see anything particularly interesting here. I guess before we skip it, we should mention it ranked 24, fitting right in between all new X-Men and all different Avengers. Saga number 34 continues chugging along. It is down slightly, just under 50,000 at 49,363. You know, just at this point, that's almost what you expect from that book.
Yeah. I think it may have lost its luster a little bit. At one point, it was doing closer to the 55,000 range. Yep. But I don't know if this story arc just hasn't clicked as well with people. I think once this one started, that's where we started to see a little bit of a slide.
Again, right between Uncanny, All New, and All Different Avengers is pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's doing bad. I'm just saying they're doing really well against, again, what could have been considered flagship titles or properties over at Marvel. No. And they're doing it while they're having a decline. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If the next one they come back swinging, you know, and hitting home runs, and this goes up to the 60,000 plus range, they're leaving some of this in the dust.
Another book I do want to mention just below here at 47,000, still down and still way down from where it started, but I think Doctor Strange to still be in the 47,900 range for issue 5 is an amazing testament to how well that book's doing. I'm really looking forward to when this gets to Marvel Unlimited. A Doctor Strange book doing that well, I'm assuming, has to be good.
It is. It is. Yeah. they're doing some fun stuff with that title. Further down the list is Scarlet Witch, which I think is also... it's not doing as well as it could, but I think they're doing some interesting stuff with the Mystic area in the Marvel Universe in those titles. Obviously, Doctor Strange is clicking with a lot more people. It's doing about twice the sales of what Scarlet Witch is. It's down at rank 81.
Okay.
One that I want to talk about that we kind of bounced over a little at rank 18 is the Avengers standoff Welcome to Pleasant Hill.
Okay. Yeah, I just saw it. I'm like, okay, that's got to be some kind of weird one-shot or something.
It's a one-shot that's kind of kicking off the spring Avengers event, is what they call it. To me, a true event covers everything. This is just a family of books. So regional incident or some other phrase that...
Oh, come on. Stick with it. You branded it. You came up with regional event a couple of years ago.
Incident. Keep
going. Regional incident. Keep going.
If there's a better one, I'd be willing to switch to it, but there isn't. And the thing is, when they call this an event, people are like, oh, I did under 58,000. It must suck. It's like, no, it's only hitting a certain group of titles. It's an Avengers title. I read that, and the one that really kicks it off full throttle or whatever. And I wasn't expecting a whole lot from the way they had pitched it, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
They did some very interesting stuff. Nick Spencer is doing the writing on this, I believe. And it's got a clever premise. And Nick Spencer, Mark Bagley on the art here.
Ooh, I'm glad to see Bagley's found a spot again.
Yeah, I mean, great creative team. And they did, I think, a terrific job in this issue setting the premise. And then in whatever I read after that, which I guess will be in, maybe it would have been later in this. I don't know. I'm so behind on my reading, I'm getting confused as to which book is which. Anyways, when it really kind of kicked off full throttle, it's just, wow, this is going to be fun.
Good.
And it's one that makes sense for it to be very Avenger-centric. There are a few non-Avenger books that will definitely tie in and definitely should. And I think it will rise or bump up the sales on those couple of titles significantly.
Good.
And in one or two cases, I think they need it. So definitely fun stuff.
Amazing Spider-Man, the point issues, continue to do well enough. At this point, you got to believe that point's working better than the miniseries would, right?
Yes.
For our listeners, we're looking at rank 27, Amazing Spider-Man 1.3 at 47,891.
I have just...
I know you hate these.
Systemic objections because it drives my number crunching nuts. But I get why they embed the miniseries inside the regular title. It sells better.
And which mini... What is this at least a Peter Parker miniseries or something totally different?
It's Peter Parker.
Okay, well, at least it's a Spider-Man miniseries.
Again, there are four other characters they probably could have tossed in there and still had it. I think it would have been funny if they'd done a Scarlet Spider miniseries in Amazing. Just get yet another Spider-Man out there.
Didn't they do that at one point not that long ago?
Not as a miniseries inside of it.
Okay.
And he had his own book at one point.
Yeah, I know he had his own book at one point. Right. I seem to remember it. It was Carnage that got an Amazing Spider-Man point miniseries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Carnage has his own book right now, as does Venom. It's just, again, you toss in the symbiotes and the number of titles expands.
Yes. Let's talk about, let's see, what else is interesting in here? Nothing else overly surprising. Rank 39. Paper Girls number 5, 37204, still doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And the one below this I want to ask you about, because I did pick this up. You and Drew reviewed it. Rank 40, Neil Adams, The Coming of the Superman.
What's the question?
You know what? I guess you guys covered it. I don't have anything to add other than I'm actually surprised it sold only 37,000, not because I expected much more from it, but the buzz from friends, from the internet, around the comic shop, people seem to enjoy this a lot more than I expected.
Not only did they seem to enjoy it a lot, but there was a lot of anticipation around it, frankly, even despite how Batman Odyssey did.
Yeah, I was going to say, compared to Batman Odyssey, people loved this and hated that.
Well, and Batman Odyssey started somewhere around 61, 62,000 units and finished off around, I think, 18,000 units.
I'm surprised there were still 18,000 people buying it. Okay.
What can I say? I'm persistent. this one, I'm surprised it didn't sell a little better because we had multiple people express interest in doing clips and stuff when it was in the preview stuff. It got a lot of buzz and stuff. I think it was a lot of fun. I think it was a good roller coaster ride. I think it needed a better editor.
Well, you can say that about most things Neil Adam does these days.
I could probably say that about most things done these days. And I also, don't mean that as a disrespect to current editors, just they've got a lot on their plate, and, you know, I would like to see just tighter stories overall, but that's not what the market seems to accept.
But I actually really enjoyed this book. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I tended to agree with your and Drew's comment, don't think about it too much,
mm-hmm.
but it was just fun reading.
Absolutely. And what got me is it reminded me how iconic Neil Adams' art is.
Yeah.
Because I'm flipping through this, you see Superman, it's like, I recognize that Superman.
Yep.
This dude with the t-shirt running around in the Superman book, I don't know who the hell he is. That's Superman over there.
And if you want to get nitpicky, there are things about this Superman that are not exactly classic, as far as the look goes, even, and the art. The belt seems a little newer. I think that's more of a Neil Adams thing, and... But still, it looks iconic, even though it maybe isn't 100% iconic.
It's iconic whether it's accurate or not.
Exactly.
And it reminds me of the era of that Superman was in when I got into a lot of those books. Kurt Swan was doing a lot of the art. There were just some other amazing artists. You know, and it's like you've got Clark Kent as a news anchorman on TV who during the commercial breaks is going and actually, you know, saving something that's going to be essentially the next story he's telling.
Yep.
Because that's how fast news was back in the 80s. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. I'm hoping it doesn't plummet in sales. I don't think it will. I think retailers were just... retailers and readers, skeptical and cautious on this one based on how Odyssey did.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think we might see some reorder on this and see some positive numbers by the time we get to 3 and 4.
Yeah. And the fact it's a 6-issue miniseries versus, you know, what was going to be a 12-issue one, I think that helps a lot.
Yeah. Anything else sticking out to you as particularly interesting?
I'm looking. There's if we go further down the list, Spawn 260, it's up 5.75% almost.
Where is this?
Rank 123.
Oh, wow. You really went down the list. Okay.
I've got a big monitor these days. And it's one of those, at one point, that was the top-selling Image book.
Yep.
You know, I remember when it was looking like, you know, ooh, will Walking Dead ever surpass that? And now it's doing like 4 times the sales. You know?
And to be fair, it's the only one left.
I think Savage Dragon technically is still coming out.
Which is funny, because isn't Eric Larson doing Spawn now?
I thought McFarlane... Yeah, he is. He's doing it with McFarlane.
Yeah, exactly.
That... You know, I always thought that the Image guys, you know, wanted to get away from the whole work-for-hire thing. Spawn's one of those cases, though, where the attrition just has taken its toll. It's been around for so long.
That's 25, 30 years at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, 25 years. It started in 92. Even if you just look over the last, you know, half of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's gone from, you know, above 40,000 to closing in on, 12,000, a little under that and stuff. It's doing a little better now. But, you know, if you just keep losing sales and you keep going at it long enough. I mean, to me, again, the game changer is going to be if somebody can find a reliable way to get titles to maintain sales and then actually use some marketing prowess to increase sales.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the big legacies of Spawn is the creators it gave us. Greg Capullo was unheard of, really, before he took that book on. And, I mean, he did, what, 150 issues of it?
Yeah.
You know, and now look at how he's revered. Bendis, arguably, was unheard of before he started doing Sam and Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, not only has that book lasted and kind of the sole survivor of the original Image books, you know, Eric Larson's on it now. You know, McFarlane's still McFarlane. Capullo came out of that tree. Bendis came out of that tree.
If you go down to rank 136, Angela, Queen of Hell, she came out of that book too.
Exactly.
Issue number 5 of that, 15,968 units. So really, less than a 2,000 unit difference there.
Yeah.
I find that one just kind of funny.
Is Bendis still writing that one?
Don't think so.
No.
Okay. That is, who is that? Marguerite Bennett on the writing, and Aaron Kim Jacinto and Stephanie Hans on art.
Okay. You jump a lot farther than I expected. You mind going back up a little bit to rank 61?
Son
I'm
of
sorry,
Batman.
62.
Rocket and Groot.
We talked about this last month. Issue 2 down half to 29,180. Are they pushing the Guardians a little too far?
Yes.
Again, we noticed there was the Guardians were actually doing pretty well and had actually had some upticks and were up near the 60,000 range. And then we got a Groot book and a Star-Lord book and a Rocket book and a team up book.
Well, and down at rank, I think 141, we've got Drax, number 4.
Yep.
14,619. We talked about Angela. She was a member of that team for a bit.
Yep.
We've got Star-Lord at rank 112 with 19,117 units. And there are, I think, two or three other books that have spun out of this. I would argue Venom is a spinoff of this. Venom Space Knight, which
yes.
is down... Fair where enough. Is that one? It's around here somewhere. There's so many of these. Filter to Marvel, that'll
yeah,
help.
Yeah, I was going to go for it. Venom Space Knight is at rank 96, issue number 4, 21,544, down 16% from issue 3.
Yeah.
So doing better than some of the rest of them.
But we've also got the Guardians of Infinity at rank 92, doing 22,309 units. It's funny, because you start to take the Marvel list, you've got the Spider-Man camp, you've got the Avengers group, you've got the X-Men group of titles, you've now got a large group for the Guardians. You take Spider-Man and related Spider-Women, etc., and that's a huge group of titles. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy itself, again, the 40,581 there at rank 37 is not bad. But are they overextending? Absolutely. This is not something where every member of the team needs their own book.
Unfortunately, I think you're correct in that assessment.
I'm just going with what I'm seeing from the numbers here.
Yep. Yeah. You have anything else on the big two? I think we covered them, kind of.
One that I want to talk about, because I want them to keep doing it, but I'm looking at the sales, and I don't know that they will.
Okay.
Rank 270, and yes, this is way further down on the list.
Yes, it is.
The guidebook to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Marvel Avengers. 4,775. I like these source books. I want them to keep doing it. I think they should do them regardless of how they sell, because it's something they can then shrink down to fit in a DVD or Blu-ray box as just like an insert.
Well, and haven't you argued also that these would make a few of them into a nice hardcover for bookstores when the movies come out?
Absolutely. There are multiple ways they could use this to help the movies act as a gateway into the comics. The other one I want to mention a little above it is at rank 165, Red Wolf number 3, 12,211 units. That's down 54%.
Yeah.
And that one started, where did the first issue of that start? That actually started at, 39,288. So, I mean, we've just bleeding sales. That's one that I think readers reasonably expected to see stuff set in the 1872 timely town.
Yep.
And that's not what we're getting at all. So I know Drew kind of felt that
way. Oh, that's sad.
When we reviewed it, but yeah, they're just gone. I mean,
so this is the, did the same thing.
With Jonah Hex. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Take a character in a Western setting, bump them to the current day and see what happens. And what happens is it doesn't sell. There are plenty of books in the modern setting. Now, if they just had an issue where he meets the two-gun kid or whoever had also been displaced in time and goes back, okay, fine. But that's not what they're doing. So you want to look at some of the other...
Yeah, I was going to say, anything particularly interesting? I don't see anything overly surprising, actually. I've got DC and Marvel filtered out. Outcast chugging along.
Yeah.
At rank 95, selling a little over 20,000. Not doing great, but chugging along. Fight Club number 2, still selling almost 30,000. That's got to be coming to an end, right? Or have they extended this?
I thought they had announced an end to it, but I don't recall what it was because I got off the book after the first issue.
Well, yeah, not your thing.
Not my thing.
He has fans.
Oh, absolutely.
And Chuck was actually writing that book, right?
Believe so.
Okay.
It looks like, yeah, he is. And Cameron Stewart on art. I mean, it's the right creative team for the book. It's just not the right book for me. The two I want to mention up near the top here are, and by top, I mean, again, we filtered out Marvel and DC.
Yep.
So I'm talking about a book that is 8 items down, and it's at rank 102 here.
Yep.
It's Back to the Future number 5, 21,195 units. This is the end of the first arc. After this, it becomes ongoing with number 6. They start a new arc there that, I'm blanking on the name. The lead writer from the movies is
Bob Gale.
Bob Gale, thank you. Is involved in the writing of the next arc. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing another miniseries, Back to the Future Citizen Brown, adapting the video game.
Yeah, which actually looked really interesting. I am going to pick that one up. Back to the Future. These first 5 were okay, but I'm not sure I need more of them.
The second arc sounds a lot better, to be honest.
Oh, and good.
It picked up after the first issue with the current arc.
It did pick up after the first issue. Unfortunately, it wasn't great.
The other one, though, at rank 109, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 55, 19,630, up 17%. And again, things are happening on that book from what I'm hearing. And
yes, they are.
Cool to see a 25-plus-year-old property, you know, just doing well. And legitimately so, I think. They haven't had to, as far as I can tell, you know, retool it or reinvent it or whatever. It's just, let's tell good stories.
Actually, since we're talking other stuff, go all the way down to rank 268. We got reorder on Power Rangers Zero. I thought we were expecting number 1. What's going on there? Do you know?
There was a
delay, obviously.
Well, when they solicited, they got the Zero out there. I think they wanted to let people see that before ordering the first issue. So it's first issue is out though.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I thought a month ago we talked about it, and you said, "Ooh, I've heard some crazy numbers," and I was looking for it, and I'm going, "It's not even on here."
No, I think it came out in
just barely in March,
in the second.
Okay.
So I think we'll see it in the next batch. I've heard it could be doing like 100,000.
Yes. No, I remember you saying that last month, so I was kind of looking for it, and I went, well, reorder on the Zero's good, but
I'm hoping they're successful with that because I'd like to see them do more. I love the property. So, but yes, that's way down on the list.
Yes. Well, I didn't. That was one of those I only found because I was looking for it. A book I love, and it's interesting, at rank 224, which has a sci-fi series coming, Bo Smith's Wynonna Earp, the latest number one for that at 6,397, which, boy, I'm not thrilled about, but, hopefully the TV show can help. Actually, that's a great property. Bo's an interesting cat, no question about that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's as much fun to read him writing about writing as to read what he's written.
You know, absolutely.
he's somewhat outspoken, certainly a definite straight shooter and such. I have not read that issue yet. I'm looking forward to it. I originally didn't pre-order it, but later added it to it. We were thinking about doing it for a weekly comic spotlight. It just, the timing didn't work out. I was too late to the game to get it in time.
Fair enough.
I don't think I've read that property before. I'm checking my, no, I take it back. I read the 5-issue series from Image back in 1995.
So yes. I think is the first.
Passing familiarity with the character, but 20 years later, minimal recollection.
And the showrunner, there's a trailer out that looks kind of cool. And the showrunner, why can I not remember her name, has had some interesting things to say.
Should be fun. I'm looking forward to the series.
Emily Andrus is running that show, did an interview for The Hollywood Reporter in the last few days. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
It outdid Starfleet Academy a few ranks below that. Outdid Exo Man of War, although all of these are doing within about 70 units of each other.
Yeah, these are all right in the 6-3 range.
Yeah. And for stuff coming from like IDW or Valiant, I'm hoping these are very viable numbers. Most of these guys are running tighter ships. I tell you, what really impresses me with IDW is just how many licensed properties they're juggling right now.
But as we've talked about in the past, that is true. But they're doing it, what's the word I'm looking for? They're doing it, they're spreading themselves out. They're not one license away from death.
Absolutely, and that's what impresses me, is they're not just juggling different license properties, but the license holders.
Yes.
I mean, there's more overhead to doing that than having one call saying, yep, we're still doing all your properties, goodbye, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And they're doing a good job on all of the different ones.
Yep.
I mean, if I were a license holder right now and I was looking for, we should do a comic based on this. If you don't talk to IDW, I don't know why not. I mean, they've done a good job both on the properties they have now and the ones in the past. So we'll see what happens with them. I mean, again, they're so diversified. They've got so much coming out. You know, they may not have much at the top of the list. You know, but, again, when they get something like a Back to the Future, the Teenage Ninja Turtles, stuff that's doing in the 20,000 range, that's great for them, but they're also able to stay very viable on things that are at a much lower level. You know, the stuff they're doing with the Disney characters, I think, is a lot of fun, and I'm glad they're doing it.
Yes, no, and I actually tend to agree with you. I actually picked up Mickey Mouse a couple months ago and thought it was really well done.
I'm continuing to enjoy Uncle Scrooge every month.
Yes, also. My kids were in the shop with me and saw Mickey Mouse. And
oh, said, understandable.
You know, I used to read those as a kid. Let's check it out.
Well, and for a while, when it left, those properties left Boom, people were like, oh, it's definitely going to Marvel. Where else could it go? And, well, it went somewhere else, you know? I assume Marvel had the opportunity to do it and just chose not to, and that's fine. They've had mixed success with that age group, targeting that age group in the past.
Yep.
But they've also had mixed success with other licensed properties like Star Trek. For them to be doing gangbusters on Star Wars, you know, obviously they've got different people in play now.
And I will say this, a book I have forgotten about, but you either love them or hate them, and I get that, and a lot of people hate them. But Marvel Unlimited has recently been adding all the back catalog of Star Wars stuff. Their earlier stuff, a lot of Dark Horses stuff, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just within the last week or two, they have added the vast majority of the Ewoks comic run, which is just, if you don't hate the Ewoks, is a lot of fun. I understand there's a lot of Star Wars fans that do dislike the Ewoks tremendously, but that book's a hoot if you're into just fun, good comics, and I've actually been reading them with my 3-year-old daughter, and she's loving it.
Well, and it's great to have properties that are all ages friendly like that.
Yep.
Something that as an adult you can still get some good enjoyment out of, but something you can share with your kids or whatnot.
Yep. Let's see, what else do we have that's really interesting? I wanted to ask you about, well, I wanted to point out rank 195, G.I. Joe Real American Hero up to issue 225 anniversary issue up 14% plus to 85.83.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Larry Hama is still plugging away. That book's still solid. Love that. The other book I wanted to ask you about and see if you had an explanation for.
Okay.
Rank 187. Sex Criminals number 14. 9,237. Down 70%. And not even in the realm of anything it's kind of ever come close to doing before. Do you have any explanation? Here's what's really weird. It shows 9,237, yet when I go over to look at its history, that exact same issue shows 17,196, which is much more in line with where it would be.
If you look at the price on it,
yeah,
it's a $4.69 book.
Okay.
They've done some variant editions of it.
Okay.
That this is one of the few cases. It doesn't happen often, but sometimes they'll do a variant of a comic at a different price point, either because they're charging out the wazoo for a different cover or whatever, and it becomes its own line item.
Gotcha.
Because they can't merge the price point there. I believe if you look at the comments on that cell.
Yeah, I noticed it had comments. I was like,
it had a variant cover that was triple X rated.
Okay.
So that was what that did.
Oh,
and it kind of,
and if I go up to rank 127, I can find the 17,000. That's much more in line with where it normally is.
Absolutely.
Okay.
These are kind of hard to deal with because it doesn't happen that often to have this sort of a situation where the regular issue and the variant kind of split two separate line items like this.
Got it.
And I can't not compare it to the previous thing because it's like, well, why didn't it find a previous one? You know, it's.
Yeah.
If I can find a better way to handle this, I will. But it's challenging.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
One that I want to mention, just because this may be one of the last opportunities to mention it before it drops below the radar.
Okay.
If we go to rank 300, which Ooh. Means if it drops at all, it may drop below the radar. We've got Dirk Gently's A Spoon Too Short. It's the first issue of the second volume, 3,743 units from IDW. This is yet another licensed property. But this one's interesting because they're also doing a TV series on Dirk Gently.
Yes, they are.
So I can understand why they're trying to get the material out there, but it's one of those that is again, dropping below the radar, and that's fine. It's not for everybody, and it's something that if they use it to mitigate the cost of production of the material, and then they get some trades out there when the TV series is out there and stuff, it could still be a big win for them. Win for them, maybe not a big win.
I read the first Dirk Gently. I would personally is my favorite Douglas Adams creation.
Mm-hmm.
I love the book.
Have you seen the BBC series?
I have.
Fun stuff.
I actually own not bootlegged. I have technically bootlegged DVDs. I own them in a region 2 that's in PAL that I converted and ripped and made my own copies in NTSC so I can watch them on my television.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, no, I know the BBC series well. I don't think Dirk Gently fans will appreciate this comic book much.
I don't think it has the charm of the character that the BBC series had or the books had.
Exactly. It was clearly missing something because I love that character. And I read the first four and went, no more.
Yeah. But they're at least trying to do stuff with the character on TV and stuff. So, you know, I'll give them credit for that.
Speaking of a character that I love and I have had to go no more, rank 132, James Bond number 4, 16, 837. Again, I just wish this was better.
You know, it's one of the few things that Dynamite really has that's, you know, hitting the charts these days. And I really think that Dynamite's in a transition phase right now. Whether they really acknowledge that and notice that or not or whatever, but they don't have any huge big property out at the moment. They don't have The Boys. They don't have Project Superpower or, you know, whatever. And no doubt they'll have another one of those before too long. Not necessarily those exact properties, but another big profile one.
And seemingly they don't have Alex Ross doing 20 covers a month for them anymore either.
Yeah, so I think they just need, they're at a, maybe a bit of an introspective period where they're finding themselves yet again, as many publishers in this middle tier go through this phase.
Yep.
You know, not the first time we've seen a publisher go through this, and we've usually seen them come out very successfully. Mm-hmm. We've seen Boom do it a few times. We've seen Dark Horse do it a few times over the decades. You know, the post-Boris the Bear period, the pre-Star Wars type stuff, you know. So it's nothing to be alarmed about. It just depends how long it lasts and how strong of a business they are to weather that and how quickly they kind of figure out what their next big push is going to be and how well that works.
Yep. Another book we've talked about at rank 142, Rick and Morty number 11, down a whopping 34 units from last month to 14,569. Again, seemingly they have found their spot and at least are no longer hemorrhaging readers. And to be fair, they gained to get to this point.
Yeah.
One of the few on the list that the overall arc is up. And again, while they're down this month, it is 34 issues, less than, you know, a quarter of a percent.
They're still down from the first issue. But yeah, again, they've almost flatlined entirely. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
They dropped on the second issue. We're kind of even on the third and have been climbing up till they hit this point. Yep. For the last basically four issues, give or take.
Yep.
You know, so this is stable sales. This is exactly what I'm talking about how you've got to get to an even solid footing in order to go up from there. So, you know, this is something that the few people I know that are, you know, fans of it are very much fans of it.
And I became one of them thanks to discovering this. And one of our listeners who I can't remember what he goes by on the forum, told us all about it. And
mm-hmm.
I discovered them on Hulu and started picking up the comics. And yeah, no, I really enjoy this series.
I still haven't watched it on Hulu or anything yet. I need to do that. But the fact that it's got this level of stability and success, I think is great. Because then all they've got to do is really have a good promotional push, a really good story arc. They've got a solid footing from which they can gain readers. You know, I think the problem most titles have is they're continuing to slide down the hill. They can't get that foothold to push themselves up. Or if they do, it's just a false thing. They're pushing themselves up and off the cliff kind of a thing.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Another one, anniversary issue at IDW. Another one that went up. Transformers made it to issue 50 in this current run. At rank 168, 11,098 issues, up about 32%. But again, for an anniversary issue, not surprising.
Also, part one of a story arc, so we'll see how much, you know, carryover, if any, they get in the next issue.
Yep.
You know, it's fun to see some of these properties that have been around for decades, you know, getting, again, treated well, again, at this point at IDW and stuff, finding an audience and doing well with it.
Another book that had a drop on issue 2 and 3 and then kind of started heading back up and has been up the last three issues, Titan, Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, year 2, number 6, is up to 96.17, up from 95, up from 84. So that seems to have found an audience and stabilized as well.
Well, and it's just amazing how well they're doing with just the multiple doctors coming out. I, you know, at one point this would have been something that some other publishers would have tried to do and it would have just killed the whole thing. We've seen some publishers that just almost strip mine a property. And the fact that they're able to do so many of these concurrently and not kind of dilute the thing or whatever is impressive. I think that by and large, these have all kind of found their level and stuff. They're all doing within the range of 10,000, give or take, you know, a few thousand. And yeah, it's, they're going to have, I think, the ninth Doctor be an ongoing one. They're doing, some of the other earlier Doctors. And as they've added titles, it's not like it's eroded sales of the other books. So if they continue slow and steady and keep up the quality, they could keep this going for a while. They could easily add, maybe not necessarily additional Doctors. I think they're, I don't know at what point they hit the threshold there. It may be, you know, 13 or 14 for all I know. But there's also Sarah Jane Adventures, Torchwood, the upcoming Class series. There's other ways they could even extend this franchise. Mm-hmm. They could also, depending on how tight they are with the BBC, expand it in some directions that are not televised, but take some of the characters and just say, well, here's their further adventures. You know, the Doctor's daughter or something like that. Do that as a mini series. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they're having success with this. You know, I see the success of this. I see, you know, how Power Rangers is doing, and I really think there's a lot of possibility there. But you've also got to be wary of, again, are you feeding the audience as much as they want, or are you strip mining? And there's a very fine line between them, I think.
Yeah, no. And you know, we talked about that with Star Wars earlier.
Yeah.
There is a very fine line.
I think it's one of those things where one day people, it's like, yeah, it's great, and the very next day it's too much, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it could turn that fast on some of this stuff.
Yeah. Again, a book I love, we're talking about Dynamite, one of Dynamite's licensed properties, Bob's Burgers number 8, seems to have found a stable point around 8,500. This issue's at 84,085 issues, up a little bit. But yeah, after having started in the, you know, 25,000 range and then dropping quickly to 10, the last three or four issues are kind of all right in here.
Well, and I think when you've got something that starts, you know, artificially high again, it skews the numbers. And it's funny because the 2014 series had the same thing. Started above 20,000, almost immediately went to about the 10,000, and had a very similar arc to what we're seeing on this one.
There was a 2014 series?
Yes.
How do I not remember that? Okay.
That I can't answer.
I did notice is there's some weirdness looking at the history, because there seem to be no dates for issues 2, 3, and 8.
That's entirely possible. One of the things I've noticed from time to time is some books just don't show up on the shipping lists.
Yeah.
One of them was Ivar Timewalker. Only issues 1 and 3, I think, have ever shipped, according to Diamond. And it's funny, because I've got the whole run.
Got sales invoices for books that never shipped.
But I can't chart them, because I don't have in my data all the shipping lists. And you know, and sometimes it's, yeah, my list just didn't find the data, I've got it. But sometimes the data's just not there.
Yeah.
And I've been working sporadically on, again, new... a revised issue or a number crunching process for all of this. And the data from Diamond, I mean, this is something they're putting out there just as a convenience in terms of the sales list for the press people and stuff like that. And their main job at Diamond is to get the books to the store. That's a very important part of the industry. One I very much am in favor of. But some of the issues I've seen with some of the data files just drive me nuts.
Well, and arguably, that is even a third job. Arguably, their number one job, yes, is to distribute the books to the stores. But with the previews catalog, de facto, they are the marketing arm of the entire industry as well.
Yes. I don't think they get enough credit for coming out with that catalog each and every month on time. That thing is like 500-600 pages. That's got to take a while to produce.
And you got to keep all your publishers happy. And looking at it, I'm assuming when you get, again, I'm not a regular previews reader, but I have had them and I've looked through them. I'm assuming some of those where you see things, particularly in the back half, that are way out of order and full pages, are those paid ads?
I'm actually not sure about that. At some
point,
they
sell advertising in that kind. It's hard to tell.
I think part of it comes down to what sort of agreement you get when you go exclusive or something like that. I don't know is the correct answer,
enough.
Though.
But yeah, I can't tell. But not only do you just have to list everything, you know, in the order you're supposed to for the premiere and then the alphabetical order for the back half, but going through the back half, it's more than just the alphabetical list, too. There's, you know, big splash page ads and other things and, you know, the spotlights and the cool pics. And like I said, in some ways, they're the marketing division for the industry as well.
Absolutely. They are kind of, as far as I'm concerned, the gospel of what comics are coming out.
Yeah.
And I get when people say, oh, I don't want to pay for a catalog, whatever. I intellectually understand it. But again, it's the TV guide of comics. I can't live without it.
Which nobody pays for anymore.
Well, TV Guide's a bad example. They went, I don't think books are still printing. But my point is, them expecting to get a little bit of money for the work they put in on this, I get how it's not the way it's done in other industries, how people don't want to pay it, whatever, but it's either that or higher prices on comics and have the publishers charge us for it so they can pay for it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's a valuable resource, in my opinion.
I agree. I think they do a great job with it. My complaint with previews is not that it's a bad publication or that it should be cheaper. My complaint is it's too spoilery.
Well, it's funny because that's not on the guys at Diamond.
No, it's not. It's not on the guys. But I try to read reviews and shipping lists and what's coming out this week. I try to focus there,
mm-hmm.
not what's coming out in several months.
And to me, that's... I agree it can be very spoilery, but to me that's on the marketing people at the publishers and them not really understanding the solicitation cycle timeline, which is their job to understand.
Yeah.
But they're caught up in the moment and how to hype this next set of books, not, oh, wait, we've just undercut the surprise in the book that's coming out 2 weeks from now.
Or not even the surprise. You'd be amazed. It's one of the things I love about the weekly spotlight. You'd be amazed how difficult that type of thing, whether it's in print, on the internet, whatever, is to find. No one wants to talk about the books that came out this week.
That was one of the reasons I wanted to do the weekly comic spotlight. Everybody's always talking about what's next and how bad that's going to be or whatever.
Yes, without reading it.
Nobody's talking about what's now, what yep. they've read, and even less so, what came out last month and how it sold or whatever. Yeah. At any given point in time, I've got really three distinct sections of comics I'm dealing with. Again, the stuff for these episodes here of, okay, how did last month sell? I've got what's coming out in 2 or 3 months' time for the preview spotlight. And then again, what am I reading every week for the weekly comic spotlight? And to me, all aspects, all that whole timeline is very important to the industry. Look back at how things are doing, enjoy what's coming out now, focus on that, and then look forward to what's coming out, but not at the expense of what's happening now or to the detriment of it. But also look at the past so you can predict and make better choices as to what to, as a creator or publisher, come out with in the future or what's worth buying in the future.
And as a reader, just a pure reader fan.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the fun of the wild speculation.
Mm.
It was great to read a book and sit around with your buddies and go, no, I think this is going to happen. No, what if they do this? What if they do that? And now you go, no, here, check the solicits. They're doing that.
Yeah.
That's not nearly as much fun as, you know, what are they going to do for the next 3 weeks you can talk about?
Well, and one of the barometers I use for a really good story is how much it gives you to speculate on.
Exactly.
Lost was brilliant in that respect because it would always end on a, well, what about this? You know, kind of a moment, a reveal or something.
It was great until the very last one.
Yes, I would agree with that. But I would say the fifth season of Lost was just one of the best seasons of television. There was stuff to talk about, stuff to think about and conjecture on, seasons of Babylon 5 and other shows.
And arguably both the TV and the comics, bring this back to comics, I think The Walking Dead has done a masterful job of that.
Kirkman's strength as a writer is not that he is necessarily the world's best writer. He's good. Don't get me wrong. He's damn good. I think there are others that are better technically at writing. What he is a master at is knowing where the minds of the readers and the audience are going to be
yep.
and how to play with that.
Yes. And somehow do the solicits and everything and all the press and like everybody else does in this industry and not give any of it away.
Well, part of the secret for that is the way he does his solicits.
Everyone else could copy that.
The solicit for 151.
Okay.
New story arc, call to arms. Writer Robert Kirkman, artist Charlie Adler, and various yada yada yada. I would be hard pressed to name the last solicit he's had that was more than like 5 or 6 words.
And this is where, and again, I understand it's where the industry is at. This is my complaint, and it's not 100% with Diamond. It's not 100% with the publishers. It's not 100% with the readers. It's somewhere in between in all of those.
Mm-hmm.
I wish every solicit read like that. The problem is when solicits do read like that, you get a lot of resellers upset, understandably. Hey, I got to know what I'm ordering. You get readers upset because they've essentially become their own resellers and they, hey, I got to know what I'm ordering.
Mm-hmm.
you got Diamond stuck in the middle going, hey, we're just printing what the publisher gave us.
The problem is you can do these types of solicits on a successful book.
Yeah.
Because there is a huge word of mouth campaign behind Walking Dead. It's great. You've got to check it out.
Yeah.
You know, the show is wonderful, whatever. Okay. You know, whatever people are saying, it's always positive. I mean, nobody's ever saying, oh, that's overrated, whatever. At least not that I'm hearing. But because you've got that kind of viral campaign going, he doesn't really need to sell the book in previews. It's not like it's a new thing where I'm like, well, I've never heard of this. I wonder what it is. Call to arms. I have no idea. Okay, next thing. What about that? You know? If it was something that – if you're coming at it cold and don't have access to the everybody thinks it's great and you should read it kind of a thing. In other words, if it were almost any other book but The Walking Dead, that sort of solicit doesn't cut it. I think Boom has been on – I think it was Boom, one of the publishers – that has the what is it, why we like it, why you should get it.
I remember seeing that, and I wasn't a fan of it.
I'm not. It's backwards to me. It's tell me why I should get it. But definitely give me the pitch. What's the premise? That's something that's missing on a lot of these books.
Yeah.
Why should I get, you know, Red Robin versus Red Hood versus, you know, Robin, Son of Batman, or, you know, whatever titles they're doing that all look the same.
Think how much easier when it was when you just say, it's the Robin book.
Yeah. But if you can't pitch the premise of the book succinctly, here's the basic idea. He's rocketed from a doomed planet. He's got superpowers. He's a Boy Scout. Oh, it's Superman. Okay, got it. Or he's not rocketed from a doomed planet. He had a super soldier serum. He's a Boy Scout. It's Captain America. Okay, got it. Well, which Captain America? You know? You've got to sell the concept of the title, and then you've got to sell the story in the issue. Kirkman's doing neither of those because he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
But I love the lack of spoilers. But again, it's a complete lack of information. I can't tell you how many times I've read a solicit for a book that's given away the ending to the story arc that I haven't read yet because it hadn't come out yet. You know, and again, to me, that's just I'm very much against spoilers in general.
But I do want to make the counterpoint. When DC put out the Rebirth, not going to tell you anything about it. Marvel, over the years, has put out, I know, solicits where half of them were just blacked out, classified until the end of. You complain about that, too.
Yes.
So how do you as a publisher, are you supposed to do?
I would say the master of writing a good solicit, the best solicit I think I'd ever read, was by Kurt Busiek, who actually, I think, had words with one of the marketing people who reworded it a little. But it was the solicit for the original Thunderbolts number 1. It had a ton of really good information about who these characters were, but didn't give the twist ending of the issue.
Okay.
And it was one of those, I'm reading through the first issue, and then I hit the last page, and I'm like, whoa, that just happened.
I'll give you that. But in the modern cycle, the solicit for 2 and 3 would be out. How do you write...
Back then it was 2.
Okay. My question is, when you do something like that, how do you write the solicit for 2, possibly 3, without ever revealing any of that? And still not lying in those solicits?
I'm not going to say he didn't mislead. He did.
Okay.
But that's fair. I would have to go back and reread the solicits for 2 and 3, because I would have read them at the time. At that point, I was just absorbing any information I could get about what was coming out next. I was young and foolish.
Mm-hmm.
And people think, oh, well, it's only in the modern age that we've had all these solicits coming out. No, this is like 30, 40 years it's been this way. I remember seeing in the early 80s the DC Direct Currents flyer that had the same paragraph sort of solicits we're getting now.
Oh, I remember those. I remember throwing those away. I remember the comic shop news and telling them to leave it out of my bag. And
my point is, this has been an aspect of the industry for 30, 40 years.
It has.
But one, it's more accessible. It
seems to just keep getting worse.
Yeah, it's getting worse because it's like nobody cares. Nobody stops and thinks, oh, wait, that issue hasn't come out yet. I better not say who done it.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say, well, the person who is the villain of the last arc gets his comeuppance. It's another thing to say who the person who is the villain of the last issue is who gets his comeuppance. You know? And it takes more effort. It's harder to do, but it can be done. And it comes down to, are you stuck in the moment of the round of books you're soliciting? Or are you really thinking about the bigger picture? And how can you use the solicit for the current issue you're soliciting to almost egg on people to go read the one that's coming out next week? You know, or do you do things? I mean, to me, the whole Rebirth thing is a different problem because they just tossed a teaser image out there and then essentially yelled at people for thinking it was going to be a reboot. It's like, well, what the hell were we going to think? You didn't tell us anything.
Yeah, no, and I absolutely that seems like a valid complaint to me.
It's also not a new thing. I mean, DC and Marvel have both done the, here's a cryptic image. Image does this a lot. At one point, I would get ads from Image or emails from them, press ones. It was just an image. It was a title. It was a blacked out image or, you know, just a teaser thing. It was zero substance. And I was like, oh, get excited about this. It's like, yeah, whatever. Because I was also usually checking my email on the phone when I would get them. And it's like, I'm not even getting the image. It's like, yeah, skip. There is an art to soliciting that is essentially lost. And I think whoever masters it again has a huge advantage.
That I would agree with.
Not to say they will be wildly successful, because you've also got to have the goods to back it up in terms of when they actually read the book. Do they stick around? Do they like it? But you can solicit. It's harder now because one storyline goes for like 5-6 issues, and it's hard to differentiate the different chapters of that. You're not pitching a story, you're pitching a chapter. And I think that's inherently harder. But it can be done, it has been done. And again, I go back to the Thunderbolts number one. Had it been pitched the way comics are currently done, I would have known probably, despite not wanting to, the reveal at the end, and I would have had a completely different read on that book. Again, that's part of why I am very much against spoilers. When we do the weekly comics spotlight on something that is an ongoing narrative, and we're, one, the episodes come out a week and a half after the book comes out, so you've had time. Not to say enough time, but Lord knows I haven't had enough time to keep up on my reading. But we also try to keep the spoilers to a minimum. And we've told you a week in advance what books we're going to do. We've got time codes. You can avoid them if you want to, for the most part. There have been a few times we slip. There will be times in the future we slip.
Very rarely, though. When it comes to the weekly comic spotlight, I've either read it, or if it's something I know I want to read, I'll read it before I listen.
We try to play fair.
But you try to play fair, and usually you will go out of your way to explain, okay, this is a spoiler we're going to give because we have to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And now, again, like you said, you're going to time code it all.
Yep. Now, when I do episodes on TV shows or movies with my sister, we say up front, and I think it's what people expect, this is a spoiler-filled thing, you know? But if you haven't seen the movie, hold off watching or listening to the episode until you've watched the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we try to play fair. And part of this for me is having, at one point in my career on a previous job, shared an office with somebody who would start discussions with spoilers. Man, I can't believe they just killed thus and so. And he would say this like 9 a.m. on a Wednesday, the day the book was going to be released. Local comic shop didn't open till noon. Obviously, I hadn't been there because it's 3 hours in the future. You know, drove me up the wall.
But again, how much of that's on the marketing people that got that press release in the, you know, newspaper that was going to be on your desk at 8 a.m.?
Absolutely. I'm not saying the guy was... he shouldn't have had the information to spoil it with to begin with.
Exactly.
The fact of the matter, he did, and he didn't give a crap if he spoiled it for other people. And to me, that's just rude. That's inconsiderate.
Yes.
You know, it's stealing the thunder of the creators, and that's not kosher. And I know some people, oh, there's a time limit and stuff on this. No, you know, we've got a list here of 300 plus books that shipped in February, And that's a drop in the bucket to what actually did ship in February. Plus, there were umpteen zillion TV shows that came out and whatnot in February, and movies, and books, and so forth. I like to be entertained. There's a big hunger I have for that. I can't keep up on some of this stuff. So people saying, well, you've had 3 days to partake of it.
I am somewhere in between on this. I tend to agree with you. We've had long discussions on the forum about this over the years. You know, yes, there's a respect for not revealing things. However, at some point, you know, it's been 35 years. Get over it. You didn't care, you know, if you don't know who Luke's father is, you didn't care that much to know.
There is an aspect of it's just part of the culture.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get that, but it takes about 20 seconds to say, have you seen and do you mind if I spoil thus and so? And it's just a courtesy. And there are some, yeah, okay, it's a big enough thing everybody knows. You know, yeah.
It's funny, there's a t-shirt with like a whole bunch of spoilers on it.
Yeah.
All ones that are in the cultural history. And admittedly, I never watched the Harry Potter movies, and I had read like the first four books, and I had laxed and hadn't read the fifth, sixth, or seventh, and they'd all been out for a while. I think by this point, all the movies were out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a major spoiler in that list of, hey, here's all these funny spoilers you should all know. And I actually remember seeing that image going, dang it, that one I actually didn't know.
I was going through my YouTube subscriptions and there were some titles that said, oh, well, I guess that's going to happen in a couple of TV shows and such.
Yeah.
It happens. It's unfortunate. I don't like it. I try to avoid it and would like if people did the same. Because these stories, part of what makes them sell is you want to know what happens next. Mm-hmm. Part of the skill of these creators, both the writer and the artist, is how they unfold the story. To say the butler did it completely robs the suspense of how the butler did it or who did it. It was the butler. You go into a story with completely different expectations. I can't tell you how many times my sister and I have watched a procedural kind of murder mystery show on TV. And just by looking at the credits, oh, well, it must have been him. He's the name I recognize in the credits. He's a big name from, you know, back in the 80s or whatever.
It's funny. That came up on a thread this week on the forum. There's a whole comment about
it. It did. You're right. Yeah,
someone mentioned Murder, She Wrote. Well, here's the thing. The guest star I recognized but had never heard of and was introduced in the first scene obviously did it.
Mm-hmm. This person actually was a lead on a Canadian show for a couple of seasons, so they can do the acting. We haven't seen them for a bit, so they're unknown to the American audience. It's them.
Yeah.
But and that's one thing that's just a aspect of the way TV is produced, a business reality, unfortunately. With the comics, there's none of that. These stories are blank slates, and you're robbing the creators of the opportunity to entertain part of their audience by just dismissing and having no respect for them and saying, oh, it was just this, you know, and trivializing and de facto belittling the work.
Yeah.
And I can't think of a bigger insult to do to a creator who, for the writer, probably spent the better part of a week slaving over that script. For the artist, maybe the better part of a month slaving over those pages to have somebody just breeze through. It's like, yeah, well, I knew how it was going to end. And it's even worse when it's one of their own marketing people that does it. I mean, to me, that's just bad way to run a business. You don't understand the business in some sense, because what you're selling is not the paper or the ink, it's the content of the story and the reveal, the surprise, the experience of going through it that first time. And I've got to wonder if the solicits were better done, teased a bit better, and pitched a bit better, if we would see better sales. Maybe we would, maybe we wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. Arguably, movie trailers are running into the same problem these days.
I've seen trailers that pretty much, well, crap, that was the whole movie. Looks fun, still want to see it, but I know it. In others where it's, this is the premise, they tease, ooh, that looks like fun, you know? There's an art, again, to writing, editing a really good trailer.
There is. But again, you're getting, particularly for the big films, it's not one trailer anymore, you know?
Yeah.
At this point, the Marvel movies, the Star Wars, you know, you got to cut three or four 20-second teasers a year and a half in advance. Then is the film, you know, you're going to have two to three minute commercial type spots. And then you have to do 3 or 4 or 5 minute trailers. And, you know, you start adding all that up. If it's all new footage, it's, you know, there's 35 minutes of a 2 hour movie.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things we haven't touched on for quite a while is cover design and how sometimes it's very movie poster like. Disregarding the fact that movie posters have that plethora of commercials, trailers, interview segments on talk shows and stuff like that to help also support the movie. Mm-hmm. Whereas the comic, most of what you get is here's the cover and here's about a 20 word at most blurb on it's so-and-so fighting so-and-so again or, you know, whatever.
Well, and that's completely lost. The great covers that were unique, were special, we all remember, and told you, you know, yeah, the movie posters / stock image covers drive me up a wall.
Mm-hmm.
As we've all seen, we talked about him earlier, Mark Waid, uncanny memory of comic book covers, you know.
Spooky, uncanny.
I would be interested to see if he could do that with a stack of books he's written from the last 3 years.
That's a crazy idea.
We all know he can do it with books from the 60s and 70s. I'd love to give him a stack of covers from books he's written for the last 5 years and see if he could come up with all the numbers, because I'm not 100% sure he could.
Do a reveal of the cover of Incorruptible or something from the bottom
up. Those are easy. But you know, those random Hulk issues he's done over the years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which one was, you know, the 2014 number 6, and which was the 2015 number 3?
He's going to be at the C2E2 convention I'm going to this coming weekend. Okay. It's tempting to bring a couple for just that purpose. I'm too lazy to do it, but it's tempting.
You know, again, that's not a knock on him. It's one of those things. I don't think it can be done anymore.
I don't think so, but if there's anyone who could do it, it would be him.
Absolutely.
The guy's got encyclopedic knowledge of that stuff. I saw him last year at the C2E2 trivia thing, and he just cleaned up. And there were a few he missed or whatever. It's not like he's infallible. But usually it's like, yeah, I can see how he missed that. How could anyone have gotten it?
Well, even me. My Batman collection's a little over... sitting on about 480 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more now. I can probably give you more issue numbers if you just show me the blank covers, you know, just the cover image, from the first 150 to 200 of those than I could from the last 300-400.
I don't know if I could necessarily do issue numbers, but I know there's a period of time with DC that if you show me just the Virgin cover with just the artwork,
yep,
I could give you the high points of the story.
Exactly.
But they were done-in-one stories for the most part. They were more memorable. These things we're getting are part one of six, or part, you know, whatever of six, often.
And they have six interchangeable covers and four variants for each. And
again, I think that's part of why sales erode and why you rarely see many spikes on sales other than gimmick-type stuff. Sometimes you get it on a new arc, but not even then. It's getting to where most issues somebody can't just jump on, and that's a problem. But it's not a new problem.
Well, not only can most people not just jump on, you can't walk down the aisle at a comic shop and see a cover and look, ooh, that looks interesting.
Even if you can jump on, you can rarely jump in. To me, it's the difference of trying to jump onto a bus and getting bounced off.
Yeah.
Or actually successfully jumping into the bus and staying on for the ride.
Well, and two of the most iconic covers, the I Quit covers, mm-hmm. both Flash and Spider-Man. And you know exactly which two covers I'm talking about with just saying that.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the more iconic for me is the New Teen Titans one.
Also true. And again, I know exactly which one you're talking about there. There's no covers like that in the last 5 to 10 years. Because none of them have that much to do with a story, and if so, that story got marketed, so you kind of lose focus with the five covers leading up to it, plus the, you know, six variants on it. And
there's the temptation to do an episode, maybe with you, Drew, TJ, or whoever, a couple of us, where we form up two teams, and it's basically somebody's describing a cover, and the other person has to tell what title, issue, and basic premise of the story.
Yep.
Because there are a couple. There's a period where, yep, it could be done. I'm willing to bet if I put the image cover images of these 300 comics up, it wouldn't be enough of a memory jog for stuff that I've just read in the past few weeks, in some cases, versus I could do something from 20 years ago. And, oh, yeah, I know that one, I know that one, I know that one.
Yeah.
But...
Well, again, Batman, one of my all-time favorite covers, and I don't even say that, favorite covers. And it's somewhere from RIP.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I couldn't tell you because we've seen it a million times. It's that Alex Ross painting of Alfred holding the cowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great cover. But there's, what, 9 RIP issues? I'm not even sure which issue that is.
Well, there's covers that are really good art.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there are really good covers.
And that's both. But again, since there were 9 RIP issues, it's hard, yes, to remember which one that was.
It's a chapter cover, not a story cover.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, unlike, you know, you think, you know, like Crisis 7. We all know that cover.
Yes. Again, I think that's one that I could certainly describe the broad brushstrokes of. I'm not sure I could name, you know, line up all the characters correctly or whatever, but certainly, yeah.
Crisis 7's the Superman, Supergirl one.
Yep. But all the people in the background, I don't know that I can necessarily.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're all in gray. Yeah, they kind of.
Well, the Legion was off on one side. You know, whatever. Yeah.
The Flash one too. What is that? Crisis 9.
I was thinking 8, but
yeah,
one of the two.
But yeah, that one.
Again, I might be off by an issue or two. It's been 30 years, but yeah, half the covers of the current Flash series or whatever, I don't know that I could take the Virgin covers and get them into the right order.
Yeah.
And part of that's just they don't stick as much. That's just the way it is. But I think those are the kinds of issues that lead towards the sales trends we're seeing. It's getting to where half the time I would just guess it was a number 1, 2, or 3 because I'd probably be right at a Marvel title. I don't know. It's just this was a month where we had 6.1, 6.2 million units. It was just a so-so month.
Yeah.
Not something where it's, ooh, wow, the sky is falling or anything, but it's the low end of the range. It's not the bottom. We've had worst months. The worst month we've had was 4.4 million. So we're a ways from there. But, you know, it's a little above kind of the halfway point, whatever. I should add a median to this, actually, the top 300 comics breakdown history page of the spreadsheet. But the stuff could be doing better. It's first quarter. It's not one of the stronger quarters, so things will pick up. One of the things I am sort of looking forward to with the rebirth is DC continuing to quote unquote hold the line at $2.99. Mm-hmm. Granted, they're doing that on a bunch of titles that go twice monthly, so it's essentially a $4.98 or $5.98 a month. But you know, hey, right now $3.99 is just the overwhelming price point. 212 out of 300 of the top 300 items had it. 54 at $2.99, 15 at $3.50, another 11 at $4.99, and then assorted change for what was left. Most of the books were, you know, issue 12 or under, and that's like 233 of the books. It's at the point where books are coming out so frequently that I'm thinking of reworking this, and it'll take some time. I'll need to cut over to the new system to do this. Instead of doing age of titles by issue number, do it by literally chronological age. You know, when did this title start? Oh, 4 years ago, 2 months ago, last week. Just because, again, the longevity of titles has gone down. But they keep recycling and redoing it. I'm wondering if we're going to be getting to the point, particularly after Rebirth, but also in addition to how Marvel's doing it, where the number of unique titles for, like, Marvel and DC is, if it's dropping or not. I'm just not sure. I haven't done that digging around yet. We're getting more comics, but more issues of fewer titles.
So yeah, DC publishes so much, it's less likely, whereas Marvel, you know, stays more focused, seemingly.
Marvel's doing the more frequent shipping of fewer titles than DC, but with DC having about a dozen or so that's going to go twice monthly, that may shift that.
I agree with that. No, but with Vertigo and DC and the kids line and the cartoon thing, DC seemingly just has more lines going.
Absolutely. Whereas, they have more.
You know, Marvel, you got the main universe and what, Icon puts out a book every 3 months.
They've got Icon doing that. They've got, I don't even know if they really have much of the famous authors still going.
No.
I kind of consider Star Wars a separate line.
Okay.
They've got the two or three kids books, but most of it's mainstream. Yeah.
So. Okay, yeah, that's the thing. And again, that's not a, you know, that's, yeah, that is what it is. But yeah, my DC, at least just by virtue of the diversity of what they're publishing.
I try to be pretty good both in these conversations and in my articles of when I talk about how DC is doing, I'm talking about the entire line of the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about like the New 52 or something like that for this, that line of comics,
yeah,
to exclude Vertigo and those other things. Because in my mind, how each individual line is doing is relevant. Because again, how is Star Wars doing versus the Marvel Universe titles? Or the mainstream Marvel Universe titles, not to be confused with the Marvel Universe kids titles, which is totally separate and confusing.
And are they still doing those Disneyland titles?
Once in a while, they just finished up the Figment 2 series, but that's not to be confused with the Disney Comics titles either, which is a separate publisher.
Weren't they doing like a Big Thunder Mountain and a Haunted Mansion book or something?
I think so. I don't recall seeing those on the list recently, but I just may have glossed over them. There comes a point where looking at over 300 comics and 300 trades over the course of a weekend or whatever, it all blurs together.
Absolutely.
I feel like this past weekend, I spent one day doing the preview spotlight, editing that while I was kind of crunching the numbers on the side. And then most of the Sunday kind of going through the numbers, getting that squared away, doing the article and stuff. And I still feel like I go into some of these episodes ill-prepared. You know, even having written the article and all that, it's too much to keep up in this tiny little brain of mine. And yeah, it's a lot to do, but it's interesting from my perspective to see, you know, what's late, what's working, what's not, how things seem to be getting received by the overall audience. And how that kind of sometimes agrees with or contrasts with how I think things are doing.
Yeah.
And with that, the one I want to point out just as we kind of end here is at rank 279. Archie's Shield number 2, 4,365 units. It's down 38.75% from the first issue. They have canceled yet again the fourth issue of that title for like the fourth time. So I don't know what kind of behind-the-scenes things are causing problems with that coming out, but whether I enjoy it or not almost doesn't matter at this point. I don't know if we're ever going to see another issue of this.
Well, selling at 4,300, you know, that can have a lot to do with that.
but, you know, you gotta get issues out to sell them.
Yes, that I agree with.
So...
How long has it been since issue 1 came out? Because I don't see that on here.
I don't know because my...
Because it looks like the expected on this one was October. So when was issue 1 released?
That's funny because if I look at the sales history, it's telling me October 21st is when the first issue was released.
Oh, okay. Because that's listed as the expected on number 2.
Yeah. I think this is one that my system got confused on because it was dropped and resolicited so many times.
Yeah.
It's just hard to keep track of a book when it's a revolving door of is it being published or not. Yeah. Actually, that was more for later issues, but still, I'd have to go do some digging. So, anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.